Another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Moraz. Today, our guest is State Senate President Robert Stivers, Republican from Manchester. We'll be talking about the goings-on with the state legislature during the 2014 session. And Senator Stivers, thanks so much for spending time with us today on The Front Page.
Glad to, Chuck.
Well, I guess this will be a big day in Frankfurt in the sense that I know that this was scheduled to happen yesterday, but the weather caused a delay. Governor is expected to announce his tax reform package.
Yes, we met with him yesterday. Several members out of the Senate. Earlier in the day, he'd met with several members of the House. We want to abide by his wish that it remain a private conversation because he's still working on this. And can't say that we will agree or disagree, but it's a point that we start the discussion.
Well, I'll ask you this without maybe getting into some of the specifics. Are some of the changes that he has proposed or will propose perhaps sweeping to the tax code?
Yeah, there are certain things in there that I would say that I could be very supportive of. There's some things that I'm very questionable about, but that's, you know, you can't take a single issue when you're looking at creating a tax code and speak of it in a vacuum, because you have to create a system that has many components, many moving parts, and there have to be some give and take on the issues.
Are you confident that something will get done? I'm sure you've heard the criticism among many people that there is a lack of confidence, I think, among the electorate here in the state that there's going to be any kind of real measurable tax reform, and I know some people are disappointed about that, but how would you answer that question?
Well, it's a process. The process has been started. I said this on many occasions, and I think the governor has picked it up. Nobody gave us much of a chance or even thought we would have a legitimate discussion on the pensions and what we did with the pension reforms last year, and we did that in essence, a 26-day session.
So what you're getting today is basically what you hope will be a good starting point for some extended discussion.
Well, it is a point to start the discussion with. He still didn't have all the details as of yesterday. It was much more theoretical and conceptual. And so we'll sit back and wait.
There's been the school of thought, and I'll ask you your thoughts about this measure in the sense that there are people who say, well, this thing should be revenue neutral, but in a situation where you're struggling budgetarily from the standpoint of trying to create revenue, is that necessarily a bad thing? Shouldn't it do something to create revenue?
Well, and when you talk about create revenue, we're talking about what a lot of people would say is dynamic scoring, that because you are creating more jobs, more people in the tax base, that you are creating more revenue. And that is what I think you've seen has been so successful. And I'll give you an example that's fairly close to Morehead. I had a local businessman there that's very well known in northern Kentucky that has a fairly substantial business housing individuals doing site locations. And he lost 17 clients because they went across the river to Ohio. So, you know, Ohio didn't increase their taxes, but their base increased because they brought all those employees into the system. So, you know, that's you want the way a good tax code would be created is that, yeah, there would be more revenues, but Chuck Moraz wouldn't necessarily look at any more exposure. There would just be a Chuck Moraz and a Robert Stivers and President Andrews and more people coming into the workforce.
You know, I'm kind of with you. I agree that if you can get more people working, obviously you can create more tax revenue for the state in a more positive way. Is there a way maybe to continue to promote that? Because I know that when we talk about the economy from a national scope in the last few years, it really hasn't grown in the way that many people had hoped it would.
That's true. And I'll give you an example. I'll give you another example. You know, people have heard me talk about this bourbon barrel tax. It's an ad valorem tax on bourbon. It would be very easy for a large industry. I mean, this has 15,000-18,000 employees in this state, that industry does. And I'm not saying that you agree or disagree with the consumption of alcohol. It's just an example that they're paying a tax on that product that ages for 8 years each and every year. Well, they can go across to Indiana and start building warehouses and employing people there that, you know, they're just going to let the bourbon sit. But they have to have people doing that. One of the proposals that are out there is let's do something with that ad valorem tax that it doesn't hit them so hard, but require them with the savings to reinvest, build more storage facilities, employ more people, and then they get to credit that off the ad valorem tax. So that's one of the proposals I can tell you we're very in favor of, because that promotes an industry. It will create more jobs and create a bigger tax base.
I guess what you wind up looking at in the situation is that some goods and services perhaps need to be taxed less, as you just talked about, and then some probably should be taxed that are not being taxed now.
That's true. And this is something I tease my children about. You know, telecommunications is a huge area. And again, I'm not saying this is something that you need to look at, but this is an example of how technology has changed the world. You know, people are going from landline telephones to cell phones. So you have to look at how your tax code treats those, something that is leaving versus something that is growing. The reverse is, you know, I've always argued on tobacco. You know, from a standpoint of pure economics, do you really want to tax tobacco anymore and rely on paying your recurring expenses with tobacco? We know that base is shrinking. So if you were to put, you know, a 10-cent tax on tobacco, 4 years from now your base has shrunk from 100% to 90%, so you're going to have to figure out where we get more revenues. Now, if you want to start talking about public health, it's different. That's why I say from the perspective of a pure economics argument, it's not a good base to apply more taxes to, a higher rate.
Well, I'm wondering, is could the tax reform that we start with this year lead to perhaps further changes down the road? Could this be a continuing process as you look at so many different things?
Oh, I think it has to be, Chuck. And that's because technology changes so much. And let's talk about Main Street, you know, I think right now it's what's called the Main Street Fairness Tax. Versus internet sales, things of that nature. Technology dictates and mandates that you review your tax code every so often, because there will be substantial changes in the way we live, and the services we require or want, maybe not necessarily require, but want, versus, you know, manufacturing that takes place here. You know, you have to look, because of technology, at what your tax code is doing and if it truly fits a modern society.
How are you doing with the budget? I know that the governor had proposed, a $20 million budget over a couple of years, and he had mentioned $180 million more for education K through 12. And how's the process coming?
Well, he's introduced his budget. We are analyzing it. There's a lot of new stuff that we have not seen. The House has it first. They'll make their recommendations and changes. Then we'll get it, hopefully in about 6 weeks. Then we'll make some recommended changes, and then we'll go to a conference committee to reconcile the changes. So the process is taking place. It's natural course, and we are analyzing all the different aspects of the budget. And so, for me to say that one issue is of interest over another would be accurate, but it may not necessarily be something that is in product, depending on what the House does with the governor's proposal and then what we do with the modified proposal of the governor.
Well, as he's proposed more money for K through 12 education, he's also talked about, I guess, general 5% cuts for most state agencies otherwise, and that seems like it's a pretty sizable cut in lieu of the fact that there have been a lot of cuts over the last several years.
Well, depending on where they come from, and I always found it interesting when the government shut down in Washington, D.C., they made the statement that all non-essential personnel weren't required to show up. Well, I'm trying to figure out why they were required to, if they were non-essential, why they were required to show up in the first place. it's a matter of perspective and what's going on and prioritizing. There is no doubt. And I'll say this for all 138 legislators. We all know that the great equalizer in this economy, and not just in the state of Kentucky but worldwide, is strengthening education. And we want to do the best we can to strengthen education. We not only are interested in just, you know, figuring out what type of monies are appropriate, but what type of programs. And we want to just, you know, people think it's a money issue. It's not just a money issue. It's a programmatic issue combined with a money issue. How can we have more effective teaching? How can we have more effective delivery of services into the classroom? So, we're sitting here looking at 70% of the failing schools coming from Jefferson County, but that's only 1/6 of our population. What do we need to do different there? It's not just to throw money at it. We need to have some programmatic changes there.
I agree with you on that. And the one thing that I'll ask you about, too, we talk about putting more money into education. Obviously, everybody is concerned about improving education. We talk about education K through 12 right now, but at the same time, Kentucky's higher education system will take another 2.5% under the governor's proposal, which means likely more tuition increases. And the goal, for all these kids who come through K through 12 is to get into higher education, or at least most of them anyway, or have that opportunity if they desire it. But in a way, when you talk about raising tuition again and again because there are more and more cuts to higher education, isn't that like moving the goal line further away from these kids as they try to get into higher ed?
Well, that's really it's a valid argument because you're shifting the responsibilities. But something actually I have spoken with Dr. Andrews and many of the presidents about, they have been very good, and I think many of them are continuing to look internally to see how they can reapportion and reapply their assets. And I'll give you an example, and this is exact example I've given to, I think, 5 university presidents. If you have an area that you are graduating 150 students, but you know they can only employ about 20 of them, why do you have that program in the first place at that size? You know, I can understand admitting 35 or 40, but why are you graduating that many? But why are you graduating 150 when only 20 will get a job? Then you turn around and you hear. And this isn't anecdotal. This is a study that the governor commissioned. We're 4,000 healthcare providers short in the way of PTs, OTs, nurse practitioners, nurse anesthetists, all the different types of medical fields. But I get calls constantly saying, well, my son or daughter didn't get into that program. There was only 10 spots open. And we're not doubling up on that when we have 4,000 spots that we could fill statewide. So it becomes a question to many of us how we can reapportion our assets, and this is really what the special session of 1997 was under Governor Patton, that our universities adapt to what the employment demands are out in the community.
Again, our guest today on the front page is State Senate President Robert Stivers, Republican from Manchester. We need to take a break on the program. We'll come back with more right after this.
Support for MSPR is provided in part by Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky. With a $6 billion investment in our state and thousands of jobs at its Georgetown plant, plus thousands of additional indirect jobs through part suppliers and vendors, Toyota is more than an automotive maker. It's an economic engine that drives the Commonwealth. Toyota Kentucky is online at facebook.com/visittoyotaky. Toyota in Kentucky, part of the economy.
Welcome back to today's front page again. We've been joined by State Senate President Robert Stivers, Republican from Manchester. I'm Chuck Meraz. And Senator Stivers, as we continue our discussion, I know that it seems like every time that we have you on and every session that we go through, expanded gaming seems to come up. And again, I guess this is being looked at from the standpoint of maybe finding a way to put this on the ballot, because this would involve a constitutional change here in Kentucky and maybe letting the voters once and for all decide to kind of go thumbs up or thumbs down on expanded gaming in the state. Kind of what are your thoughts along that line?
Well, actually, this is something the Speaker and I both agree on. Constitutional amendment is not really needed. It is a situation that the individuals in the legislature want political cover. I know of no prohibition in the Constitution against gaming. Actually, the Speaker, when he was the Attorney General, wrote an opinion to the same thing. If anybody finds that prohibition in the Constitution, they need to make two phone calls real quick, one to Keeneland and one to Churchill Downs, because they've been gaming there for years and years and years by pari-mutuel wagering. So it's political cover for people to say there is the need to put this on the ballot, because really there's not. But that's what most people feel is the appropriate way. If there are the votes that can be mustered in the House and Senate on a constitutional amendment, which means 23 votes in the Senate, 60 votes in the House, if there is that type of support, there'll be a constitutional amendment placed on the ballot.
So what do you think about the issue? Do you think that the voters should decide this, or this should be decided one way or another once and for all, so we don't have to continue to discuss it year after year?
Well, here's my thoughts. You know, Chuck, I'm when I first got elected some 17 years ago, I said I would do things that I thought I would want to advise my kids to do and what would be in their best interest, because if I do that, then that would be in all children's best interest. The parent does those things. Understand what gaming is. That's an individual going into a facility and betting. The odds are against them winning. It's a zero-sum game. So basically you're saying, I want Chuck Meraz to go out and lose $100 so I can tax it. And that seems a little inconsistent with me about the role government should be playing. And if I were to look at my son, I don't think I would tell him to go do that. So why would I want to tell other people that they should go do that?
But there are those who will say, shouldn't it be an individual choice to make? I mean, I'll personally tell you, I'm not a gambler, probably wouldn't even go into a casino if we had one built right here next to my office, maybe to go in there and get a drink of water or something and come back out. But there are those that say we at least want to have the choice because it could create revenue.
Well, and I understand their argument. I understand the argument that 60% of the population is within an hour drive. But understand, we are not a referendum state. We are a representative government. And if you were to poll and ask people if they wanted to vote, and I'll ask you this question, Chuck, wouldn't you like to vote on some Second Amendment issues?
Oh, sure.
Well, yeah, so that would poll pretty high, too. But if you ask the general public, do they want to vote on a collaborative agreement between doctors and nurse practitioners, most wouldn't even know what it is. So the role of the legislature is to recommend issues that they feel are appropriate to go on the ballot because they think it's an appropriate business or an appropriate issue that the people of Kentucky should ratify.
Well, we've got another topic I wanted to ask you about. I know that the governor has proposed an expansion of the Mountain Parkway to make it a four-lane highway, and this would be from Campton to Prestonsburg, and I think it's a $753 million project over the next 6 years. What are your ideas on that?
Well, if we can afford to do it, I think it would be really good. That's been one of the problems in eastern Kentucky, is a good access in and out of the area. Part of it would be done by tolling. Part of it would be done by just the natural flow of monies coming in from motor fuels and weight distance tax, automobile sales, things of that nature. If we can do it within our budget, I think it would be good. And the biggest reason I say that is we just went through a redistricting session back in the summer, and one of the things that was very, very noticeable when you looked at redistricting, people think I'm being kind of odd talking about a road and redistricting, but you could see the population growth along I-75, I-65, I-64, I-71, just huge population growth in those counties and cities along those arteries, those transportation arteries. And so it just jumps off the map when you look at it to say, hey, economic development takes place where, you know, modern roadways and systems are in place and built.
And we've talked about this before in terms of infrastructure. Sometimes Eastern Kentucky is almost like the land that time forgot.
It's harder. If you were to go to Bowling Green, Kentucky, where, you know, they think a mountain is something that you can, you know, that's 50 foot high, you know, that's a rolling hill. But when you got to move rock and everything else with the landscape in Eastern Kentucky, everything's a little more expensive to build. Actually, it's about double when you start trying to build infrastructure, because instead of, you know, making a cut through a mountain, you're laying road on flat land and putting a water pipe in or a gas pipeline in, sewer line in, instead of, you know, taking a ditch witch and putting something 40 inches in the ground, cutting through plowed ground that's tillable, you're cutting through rock in the east. So it's just much more expensive that way to try to deliver infrastructure and build infrastructure in the east.
I guess a last point I was hoping to talk to you about is there is a local sales option bill out there, I guess, and it's in regards to municipal governments and giving them the option to put up local sales taxes that would have to be approved by voters in order to allow them to perhaps build projects in their local areas. Do you have some thoughts on that?
Well, that's an interesting proposal, Chuck, because I'm an individual that thinks, hey, local school systems, you know, local city councils, local fiscal courts should have the ability to have local control of issues. This would give local entities that ability to put something out, to pass a tax, make sure everybody understands, a tax on something that would be specifically dedicated to creating an infrastructure-style project. And then once that project was designated and the tax was proposed, it would be a local referendum to either vote it on or vote it off. So it would be pure local control in the ultimate sense. The only thing that concerns me is it's another way for the individual to get taxed. But if you think about the policy, it is a pure local control policy. So it's one of mixed emotions that I have.
Well, unfortunately, I'd like to follow up with you on some other things, but we're out of time for today, and I know that you're a busy guy with everything that's going on there in Frankfort, and certainly we appreciate your time today on Front Page.
Hey, Chuck, it's always a pleasure to talk to you and say hello to a lot of my friends back in Moorhead and Round County.
I know you got a lot of them, so it's going to take me a while, but I'll try.
All right, thanks, Chuck.
All right. Again, our guest today on the Front Page, State Senate President Robert Stivers, Republican from Manchester. I'm Chuck Morales, host of the show. See you next time.